This is Deep Blue, where we get the true life stories of BYU athletes, coaches, and fans. Here's your host, Jerem Jordan.
Today's show, we talk with a dude who was in the same NBA draft class as LeBron James, who almost played in the Olympics for Russia, who has overcome death in his family, a torn Achilles, a herniated disc, but who has played all over the world, had the nickname Elder 8 Mile, who was 44-1 in the Marriott Center as a Cougar, and who has done some amazing nonprofit work around the globe. He's one of my favorite people ever, and he's a fellow Mapletonian. He is Travis Hansen. What's up, Travis?
What's up, Jaron? Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
There's a lot to digest there. I tried to summarize your life in like a paragraph. There's a lot to discuss.
I like the injuries. That was as part of my bio.
You've overcome a ton, dude. Okay, so do you go to Mountain View in Orem? Do you grow up in Utah County in Orem?
Yeah, dad's from Idaho, Boise, farmer, alfalfa.
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 Nice.
Mom's from Richland, Washington, Tri-City area. They met at Rick's. He played football. He decided to come to BYU and get an accounting degree. And thus we grew up in Orem and I attended Mountain View High School.
I was at Mountain View recently. My daughter had a karate tournament. You and Aaron Thorne have a little glass case with some jerseys in it. That's pretty cool, man.
They treat us well. We're Bruins for life, you know. Aaron was a phenomenal basketball player, still a good friend of myself and our family. And she played with my little sisters, who were twins, who were McDonald's All-Americans and won 4 state championships there. And, yeah.
Like with the Chessmans?
Yep.
Like, okay.
Yep.
Gotcha. There was an amazing run there for a while.
Yes, with Lara Romo and Coach Houle, phenomenal people. And they won. They knew how to win. And so, yeah, we got our jerseys up there. They treat us really well. And I go back there often, actually, to speak and help out with the new coach, Coach Whitehead, over there at Mountain View.
I'm still waiting for the Dan Henry jersey, but it's not up quite yet. We'll figure that out later. Okay, so you end up going to UVSC out of high school.
Yep.
What was that experience like? And you're a young guy, and you're dealing with your mom passes away of pancreatic cancer around this time, right?
Yes. I ended up staying close to home. I actually had quite a few Division I offers. BYU was 1-25 at the time, so no one wanted to come to BYU. I was super close to going to Utah. Rick Majerus was very interesting with Jeff Judkins, and then I was a Prop 48. So I took the ACT one time, didn't get a high enough score, and so I had to go JUCO route. I decided to stay close to home, went to Utah Valley, and ended up being a good choice because my mom, we found out, got sick, and then she got sicker. And then we found out she wasn't going to get any better. And that happened within a span of 3 months, 4 months.
And you're 18 at this time? Are you at Mountain View or are you?
That was the fall going into my Utah Valley. So halfway gotcha. Through my season, we find out my mom has pancreatic cancer. Mm. And she'd been dealing with some pains and back pains, but then we found out it was actually cancer. And 3 months later, we lost my mom.
Wow. So what month do you find out, and then when did she pass away?
We find out, I think it was December, right before Christmas, and March 28th, she passed away.
So you're trying to take all this in during your freshman season of basketball, and obviously one's a priority over the other, but what was that whole experience like? I'm sure it was crazy tough.
Crazy tough. You know, moms are everything. They're glue. They're special. They're amazing. They're Christ-like, and my mom was everything to our family, and we were young. You know, my little sisters were 11 at the time. I had a little brother who was 14, and my dad was a singles ward bishop serving and trying to build his business, Hansen Insulation. And so we were busy, and we needed her. We needed mom. And looking back, thank goodness I had 18 years with her. The last thing she told me, I actually was rubbing her feet. Her master bedroom filled up with morphine and just medicines to help her relax and one night it would make her itch, the type of medicine. So we were rubbing her feet, and she looked at me and said, "Travi, you ain't going on a mission. Are you gonna follow Jesus?" And I don't know if I'd made that decision until my mom actually looked me in the eye and asked me. And 4 months later, that was the last night she was with us here on Earth. And 4 months later, I found myself in Santiago, Chile, serving a mission for my mom and for God and Jesus and trying to help others.
Wow. So that influenced you to go on a mission then. Would you have gone on a mission without that moment?
I'd like to say so. I hope so. But man, your mom looks you in the eye and says, "You gonna go on a mission? Big boy, you gonna do what's right? You gonna And yeah, that was, that pushed me over to say, I'm going to, I do whatever my mom asks. Absolutely. I'm going.
Like literally last dying wish kind of moment here. It feels like.
Absolutely. Wow. Yep.
How has she influenced your whole life?
We go back to the way she lived her life, the way she fought cancer, the way she raised us. Everything was about love. She loved us. She loved supporting us in sports. She pushed us. She wanted us to get good grades. She wanted us to have good influences and friends. She wanted us to do hard things. And so all those have affected me greatly. And the person I am, the person I've become, the dad I am, the parenting my wife and I do at home. And then, you know, also that choice to go on a mission has affected me greatly. I got that amazing opportunity to serve the people of Chile, to do something greater than myself, to preach the gospel 24/7, which none of us really have an opportunity to do any other time in our life, to walk the streets. I'm 6'5". My trainer's 6'5", Jason Abbott from Vegas. He just came over the other day because he was dropping his son off of the MTC. Man, that life, time goes fast. And we're both 6'5", 220-pound young men with hopes and desires and love for all those people walking down, and we probably scared the crap out of everybody, you know?
I've always thought about that too, being on the other end of that. I went to Brazil, so a similar experience where, do you think like the American FBI is showing up at your door? Like, what do they think this is, you know, initially, right?
Yeah, many times they do.
And then they're on a bike. It's like, why aren't you in a car?
Yeah, what's wrong with you? yeah, and just, I mean, that opportunity to serve a mission is just, so what a mission does for you, the leadership opportunities, the confidence and humility, the opportunity to be around a mission president who's, him and his wife are typically unbelievable human beings, unicorns we can find in the world, and they mentor you and they spend time with you and they love you. And they, it's just, the whole structure of it was just phenomenal. So I got home and I was a different person. In fact, I got home 2 weeks after I got home. I saw my mom, or saw my dad and my sisters, and they had gotten older. My dad was still single, and it bonded our family close, you know, losing your mom. That was very emotional to see them. And then 2 weeks later, I found myself in Compton, went to L.A., California for a basketball tournament. My dad signed me up. I said, man, I'm not in shape for basketball. He said, yeah, let's go play.
Nowadays, we would not encourage this because it's too quick, right?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
You got to get like ease into it.
Yeah, take it easy. Burn those empanadas off, you know. And I'm in L.A. with my dad, and we're playing in a tournament. Very first game. Everyone's in the stand. Coach Rose, Coach Cleveland, Majerus. I mean, you know, all the coaches here on the West Coast are in the stands.
Is it assumed that you're going to transfer somewhere?
Or
they just want you to transfer to their schools at this point?
Everyone's just recruiting everybody, right? It's summertime. Okay. It's, you know, it's July, August. It's live.
Who's out there?
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And so I show up and I play on a team. And I catch it. I don't think I start. I get subbed in and I got my mission legs, right? And I hit a three. And you know, I'm one of very few white guys in the gym. So they're all, he's a white guy. He can shoot. He's a shooter.
Shooter!
He's a shooter. Guard him. Don't let him get open. Make him put it on the ground. Make him dribble. And I'm like, man, I'm actually, that was lucky that I made that shot. Like, I'm not a three, but I'm a slasher. So they come, the very next play, they pass it to me on the wing, and they come flying at me, hoping that, you know to cover the shot. I take two dribbles to the left baseline, jump, and dunk it. And explode the backboard, just completely destroy the rim. I'm falling down on my back, and I first and last time ever breaking the backboard, and I still have the rim in my hands. You know, I'm falling down like slow motion, like where should I put the rim? Like what's going on? Glass, and I hit, and they come flying out, ambulance, EMTs, and they keep saying close your eyes because the glass, if it gets in your eyes, you know, could be very damaging. And we found out later that the metal bracket, which holds the hoop in place, came back around and twisted, and I landed on my back. So I ended up in the LA hospital, had about 20 stitches, and as I was walking out of that gym, they yelled, "White Chocolate Thunder, that's my guy, that's my guy." He shut down the tournament, he shut down the gym, and I had plenty of scholarship offers. Just 2 weeks off my mission, doing what my mom said, being obedient, working hard.
From those two plays?
Two plays, signed to BYU.
Wow.
No more tournaments, nothing.
No more, that was it.
Yeah, shut it down.
How close were you to going somewhere else? Oh, by the way, I've seen that video. It's so good. It's so good.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know where I would have went. I mean, obviously, BYU was in a different place when I got home. Dave Rose, he was at Dixie before my mission, and he was the first person ever to come into my family, my home, while my mom was still alive, and offer me a scholarship.
As the Dixie head coach.
Oh, wow. And to see him, fast forward a couple years, at BYU, and Coach Call, who had coached me at Utah Valley, was here, and Coach Judkins, who had tried to recruit me at the University of Utah, was here. I had already built a really good relationship with those three individuals, and it was a pretty easy choice.
And that's interesting because, like you said, BYU's climbing out of 1-25. The one win versus Utah State. I'll always hang that over the Aggies. Utah, meanwhile, is going to Elite Eights, Sweet Sixteens, a Final Four.
Yep.
They lose to Kentucky in the national championship game in 98. I mean, that program is at another level, right? A place where BYU's never been, still trying to get there. Yet, you were like, nope, BYU. Well, it was the relationships? Was it the school? Was it, okay, now they're not the 1-25 program? Because you'd already, well, I guess, would you have come to BYU had you had the ACT score originally?
No. I would have went to Utah.
You would have gone to Utah?
Yep.
Okay. But now you say BYU.
Yeah, I mean, before... In high school, BYU was 1-25, and you're right. Everyone wanted to go to Utah. It was the Final Four, Elite Eight, Keith Van Horn, Andre Miller. It was the place.
Doliak.
Let's go.
I feel like I can name the whole starting five there. Right. Like as a kid growing up.
Drew Hansen. I mean, we're talking.
Yes.
You want to win.
Britton Johnson.
Yeah, you want to. You want to win. Kids want to win.
Yeah.
As much as you want to be the guy and you want to play and you want to be on a winning team, and Utah won, and so I would have went there. Now coming back. It became a lot about relationships and who you trusted and who you want to be around.
Did your mission change that for you?
Absolutely.
Or did you care about that?
No, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Mission matured me, changed. And then also, you know, you look at it going back and I don't even remember half the games. I don't remember where it was. There's so many milestones I really don't remember. But what I've taken with me fast forward playing professionally for 10 years is the relationships and the experiences. And that's what, I don't know if I had even better relationships and experience than I did here at BYU. So it ended up being a phenomenal choice. Very thankful forever that they came here, that there was a change that was made, and that I had the opportunity to come play for the greatest university in America.
It's hard to explain that to an 18-year-old or a 20-year-old. Hey, what you care about now is not what you care about then.
Yep.
And I can even say that to myself, right?
Yep.
To ourselves now. Hey, what you care about now, you won't later. Like, it rotates, right? And it's interesting. So it's interesting to see what led to that decision. Now, I've never asked you about this before. Did you get a tattoo to honor your mom or something at UVSC?
Yep.
Tell me about that.
Mom passes away. Rough, dark time, right, for any young man, let alone an 18-year-old. And you're lost. And you find comfort in your friends, typically. And my friends happen to be, you know, Celestia Rivers and Leland Osborne and guys that, you know, when they go through stuff, Leland's from the streets of Vegas, you know, Celestia's from Texas, now he lives in Arizona, you know, tough dudes. You go get a tattoo to honor, you know, you get a symbol or some type of ink that has a meaning behind it. And so yeah. I went and got a tattoo with those guys and it meant the heavens for my mom. It's something to, you know, you pass the time, but also it was something to remember her by. Then I end up on my mission, and towards the end of my mission, President Hinckley says, young men, young women, you know, have one piercing, and young men, have one piercing and no tattoos. And I'm like, oh, I should remember him coming out and saying, it's like, time to get it off. You know, if I want to be a good example, I got to get it off. And getting it off is 100 times worse than getting it on.
Pain?
Yeah, painful. Yeah, it's a laser. Burns it off, burns the skin, and it's hot. It does not feel good. But, yeah.
Did you do that?
Right after my mission, I think a year after. I think I played here my sophomore year, and then my junior and senior year was off.
Gotcha. Where was it?
Right shoulder.
Right shoulder.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, there's pictures, BYU, back in the day.
Sometimes they Photoshop them out, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
Raphael,
right? Raphael had too many.
Nowadays, they don't care. That's changed a little bit, which is good.
Yeah, and it came down to wanting to be a good example. It came down to
I mean the Photoshop.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
But for me, it came down to following the prophet, making good choices, being mm-hmm. obedient. You know, if you do so, you'll be blessed beyond your imagination. Heavenly Father gives us his very most for our very least. And so if my very least is getting a tattoo off to being a good example when I'm playing in front of hundreds of thousands of young men and I want them to be good, then I need to set an example.
Okay, just don't look at Richard Harwood's right arm this year then.
Everyone's different. You know, for him, it could be the stash, you know. Or
he's got Lord of the Rings on there. It's actually pretty cool. Okay, so we'll get to your BYU career in a second, but your time at UVSC, it turns into UVU. That still matters to you, right? Like, isn't the, I assume maybe you donated some money for the strength and conditioning facility, or they just love you, or a combination of both. They've named it after you? The Travis Hansen Strength and Conditioning Center or something like that?
Yeah, the one place I never went, right? The weight room. they've treated me really well, and I'll always have an amazing place in my heart for UVU. I met my wife there. I serve in a stake presidency at UVU at the Institute building now.
That's cool.
I met my wife as she walked up the steps of the UVU Institute building, and now we serve there together, which is pretty awesome. Telling YSAs, sign up for Institute. It's a great. That's where you meet people. So yeah, it's everything's come back around. They treated me really well. They put a banner up there in their practice facility, and have named the weight room after me. And they know how to treat people. You know, it's Matt Hall and Mark Pope when they were there. Yep. If there's anybody that knows how to treat people and create a great community and bring back alumni, it's those guys. And so, yeah, we've really enjoyed our time and look at our time back with great memories.
Okay, so you play at BYU. Your nickname, Elder 8 Mile, because that movie comes out. You got the bleach hair. You got the. Did you take well to that nickname at the time after Eminem? Or was it annoying? Was it awesome?
Because
I loved it as a fan of BYU basketball. I was like, this dude's awesome, dude.
Yeah, I was kind of numb to it, basically. I look back at my time when I was here. I probably should have enjoyed it more.
Who gets the nickname Elder 8 Mile? You know what I mean?
I just wanted to win.
And you did.
I wanted to win so bad. I wanted to crush everybody that we played. And I wanted to fight. You know, I wanted to win so bad. And wife's going through hair school. She bleached my hair. Then Eminem comes out and the movie comes out. And if you're a player, you get a nickname. I think it was the University of Utah or San Diego State. One of the student sections put that in.
Mm. And that's where I came from.
And it stuck. Yeah.
Yeah. And you were okay with it?
Yeah, sure. whatever distracts them from winning.
And it did many times. A couple of Mountain West Conference titles. I read 44-1 at home. You only lost one home game?
Yeah.
What was the one home game?
Shouldn't have lost it.
Who was it?
I don't want to talk about it. I'm serious. It still makes me so mad.
Was it
lost
done?
It? Yeah.
Oh. But you beat them a couple times?
Yeah.
Okay. They got the one.
Yep.
You really don't want to talk about it. That success at home is incredible. Why was that group so good in the Marriott Center?
Fans.
Different setup at the time, by the way.
Yeah.
Where they are.
Yeah. I think the Rock student section is just unbelievable. When you're a player and you want to play well, but you're nervous, right? You're going out there and you got your parents, you got your family. But when you have people cheering for you and you have people collectively, the energy, you play out of your mind. It's like you go to your church and you try to dunk it. And then you come in the Marriott Center with 20,000 screaming fans and you're vertical instantly raises 5 inches. You know? You're like, oh my gosh, it's got to be the floor. It's the floor. It's got to be the shoes.
The floor was springy, right?
The floor was springy, but it's the energy. Mm. And so we played collectively harder, better, more unified, more confidence when we played in the Marriott Center because of our fans. And it takes really mature teams to play with that same emotional intelligence and discipline away games, which we've kind of struggled on away games, but at home, yeah, collectively, we figured it out, and it made magic happen.
Tell me about that era of BYU basketball, because we're coming out of the 1-25, and now BYU basketball gets to a point where, yes, it's back in the NCAA tournament, and there are a couple conference championships in there, and it's BYU basketball is back. It's back to where it was kind of the early to mid-90s, right? So what did it take for that group to kind of resurrect the program at that time?
I mean, it took some really great leaders, coaches, and players, and guys that really knew how to play, and they really wanted to make a difference. They wanted to win. And so they did a really good job of hiring the right coaches. Cleveland, Rose. I mean, Rose is the greatest assistant of all time. Everyone loved him. He was incredibly smart, offensive-minded. I mean, Dave Rose could have coached, you know, me and the pros. He's that good. And then they had killer recruiters. I mean, Brian Santiago was our director of ops. So
the associate athletic director, kind of the number two, tied number two in the program.
Yep. And so awesome. And so the staff was A+. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing you do when you want to build a business, right? Vision, strategy, build A+ teams, do big deals. So they had great vision, great strategy, build an A+ staff, and then they did some big deals and they recruited some big time players. I mean, Terrell Ladey, Trent Whiting, Mikelli Wesley, Hoffa, me. I mean, that was a good enough group to win a lot of games.
Do you have a couple of games or moments or plays that kind of stick out as some of your favorite from BYU?
Yeah, I mean, going down 17 to Utah at halftime and coming into the locker room and everyone's depressed, sad, just kind of in this weird mindset of what just happened? Like, why did we just get rocked? And Brian Santiago, you know, the coaching staff would meet at halftime together kind of outside the locker room and discuss things, and then they'd come in, you know, they'd probably put a strategy together. Okay, what do we need to improve? Okay, who's talking? Who's going to say what? Okay, let's go. And Brian was usually part of that staff meeting. And instead, this time we went in the locker room awaiting the coaching staff to come in. He came flying through the door, kicked the door down. What? And his halftime speech is one of the greatest I've ever heard. He had that Puerto Rican sass, Latino, and that confidence of, look, if I was an ally, I'd want you guys with me. You know, let's go fight. If we're going to go down, let's go fight. And I was like, this is almost like a Braveheart speech. And we came out, we won. We came out and we had way more confidence, way more fight in us. And that's sometimes all the difference you need.
That was a great comeback. That's one of the notable ones, right? Like 01 or 02.
Yep.
Yeah. Any other plays or moments that were funny or hilarious?
Oh my gosh, I got too many. How much time do you have? I mean, traveling was so fun. Hoffa and Creighton looking at me winking as someone was shooting a free throw. Kyle Korver was next to him. And I'm thinking, what are you going to do? And Hoffa would always, you know, what? Oh gosh.
He's one of those guys where you're like, if he goes postal, I won't be surprised.
Yeah. I'm just glad he's on my team. You know, he's one of he winks at me like kind of this Grinch smile, like little creepy dee 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 dee. And then whack, Kyle Korver right in the face. You know,
oh, gosh.
Pretends he's going for a rebound, elbows him, tries to break his face, and Kyle's down and bloody.
And that's a good looking face. Come on.
Yeah.
That's America's face right there. Come on.
Yeah, Hoffa didn't like it. So he told him, and, you know, then he turns to the ref and is like, what happened? I don't know what happened to him.
Probably saying it in Portuguese. Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't. Like, poor guy. Is he okay? Man, the championships, the tournaments, the wins. Man, we had a great set of wins at Wyoming, Colorado State. The relationships. I mean, I love Trent Whiting. I don't know if the fans know about Trent Whiting, but Trent Whiting played at Snow. He grew up in Rigby, Idaho. Played at Snow, signed at Utah. Didn't love the experience. He's got some great stories about Utah Majors. And then he comes down to BYU as a transfer in his first game. I think we played Utah State. He had the sub. I mean, he just went crazy. Had like 21 at halftime. Pulled his jersey back, you know, hitting threes. Mikelli Wesley, his footwork, discipline, his intelligence. One of the, you know, he was the Luis Scola before Luis Scola.
Mm, good one.
Terrell Ladey. I mean, probably one of the all-time greatest shooting guards here at BYU. He's had an unbelievable career in Russia, made a ton of money. So I just love the players, love the staff. Those are all the memories and experiences. Love being around the guys. I miss the locker room, miss the games. I don't miss the practices as much. But I love being around it, and it brings back tons of memories just thinking about it.
That's when I fell in love with BYU basketball. It's kind of that 2001 team. I'm in high school. I'm trying to play basketball myself. And I'm just – like football, I'd always kind of been conscious. But I don't move to Utah until like 95. So I'm not buried in BYU sports because I can't watch on TV. Technology is different. But that 0-1 team, I just like clung to. That was special, beating New Mexico, right, for the conference championship. And all of a sudden, we're playing NCAA tournament games, and we're like a part of it. And it's back where BYU needed to be, right? Which is so exciting. So, yeah, when you say those names in some of those games, it's like, yeah, a 1 and 2, 3, that was amazing. I was on my mission for 02 and 3 and 4, so I basically missed the Hoffa era. I saw one game, went on my mission. But I'd heard some of these stories, so thanks for sharing that. That was great. Okay, so when you're done with BYU, are you thinking, okay, I'm good enough to play in the NBA, I should be a first-round pick? Are you hoping I just want to be drafted at all? You end up getting picked in the second round. Like, walk me through that time period.
Yeah, so you finish your senior year, which is devastating because we lost to UConn in the tournament. And I wanted to win so bad for BYU, for the fans, for everybody. And so you kind of come off a devastating loss. Your senior year's over, and there's some emotion behind that. And then you get offered and invited to go play at Portsmouth, which is the top seniors in the nation, and then you get invited to Chicago, and Chicago is usually the top 20, 30 players that most likely are going to get drafted. And in between those two competitions, you try out for teams. So teams hit you up, and you go fly into, you know, the Lakers, L.A. They pick you up in a town car. They treat you nice. They put you in a hotel. You do a personality assessment.
You're like, I'm going to break another backboard here.
Yeah, I'm going to go throw something down. And you meet everybody. You do one-on-one, two-on-two, ball handling, shooting. Basically, every NBA team does about the same assessment. And then they say, man, you're awesome. We love you. You know, they're so scared to make a bad choice. So they're just giving compliments out to everyone. You're going to be a great NBA player because, man, if we don't draft him, he ends up being, he's going to hate us forever. He's going to tell us, he's going to exploit us on ESPN. But before that, you have to pick an agent. And picking an agent is really difficult because it's a little bit of a slimy business in some regards. And also, you just don't know much about agents. You know, there's no Glassdoor review site you can go to and see agents and see how people have rated them. And so the only one I really knew to reach out to is Danny Ainge. And I had been hit up to probably about 40 or 50 agents, had them on a spreadsheet, and sent them to Danny. Danny's always been so kind to me, so good, and he says, look, there's only two guys on that whole list that I would even be talking to. And one's Justin Zanuck, who ended up being assistant GM of the Jazz. Now he's GM of Milwaukee Bucks, great human. And Bill Duffy. And Bill Duffy has Carmelo, Steve Nash, Klay Thompson, Yao Ming. And I met with both of them. I actually brought Coach Rose with me, my dad. And we decided on Duffy. And Duffy changed my life. Having a great agent, mm-hmm. someone that you really love and look up to. A black guy from San Francisco, lives in Walnut Creek. And he just took me in as like his son. And he treated me so good. I probably would have made half the money without Bill Duffy having my back and guiding me through it and validating me and at times being my psychiatrist and talking to me like, yeah, I don't know if I like the Magic. I think you fit better with the Spurs. You're an NBA guy. Are you sure? Don't you think I'd end up in Europe? No, dude, you can play. Trust me. And having someone like that, like a mentor, really, really helped me. And I'll be forever grateful for him. So choosing an agent would be probably the most critical part of these kids' next steps when they finish their college career.
So you pick Bill, and then he helps you get to the second round, like the eighth pick of the second round?
He put me in opportunities to succeed. So he took me to Bradenton, Florida. I moved my whole family down there, and I worked out and trained at IMG. Selena Williams is next to me getting her, you know, ankles taped like me. And so you're around amazing athletes, and they put you through NBA workouts. Then you fly in, fly out from Bradenton to whatever NBA team wanted to work you out. And he did a really good job of making sure you're with a guy, with the right group of guys. So most of the time I work out with like Dwayne Wade, and we were like top five guards.
Because he's in that draft class as well.
Correct.
At Marquette.
Yeah, many times we worked out in Chicago Bulls together, and Memphis Grizzlies. And so, you know, he just put me in a lot of opportunities to succeed with the right guys and with the right confidence, with the right trainers. And that led me to play really, really well. And so I think I was 22 or 27 in the first round draft, and a couple guys fell, and Joe Dumars is texting me during the draft, and that's the one team I really wanted to go to, Elder 8 Mile, Detroit, Joe Dumars, mm-hmm. I mean, and they loved me. And it ended up not working out, and I dropped seven spots, and Terry Stotts and Billy Knight ended up taking me for Atlanta Hawks, which was awesome.
What was it like playing in the NBA? Here's this kid from Orem. You've overcome so much. Here you are in the NBA, man.
It was amazing, right? You're sitting there with your family, and draft night's coming, and you get drafted, and Jay Billis talks about you, and you don't even remember what he said, and then, you know, Terry.
What did he say about you?
I don't know. 25. He's an older rookie, but he can play right away. He's not a project, you know. 40-inch vertical, Elder 8-mile. And Terry Stotts and Billy Knight call you right after, like minutes after they announce your name, and say, "We're so excited. Let's go, man. We're flying you out in the morning, press conference, media, fly in, start looking for places to live, and immediately start taking steps to move your family out there, wherever it is." And then you're right into Rocky Mountain Review, Summer League, and you're signing your check. What did I get? $50,000 bonus.
Which, sweet.
It was nice. I mean, when I'm making $700 scholarship money, about 800 because I got an extra 100 bucks for the creamery.
You got 100 bucks for the creamery?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Per month.
What?
Yep. $700 scholarship of rent and whatever else. And then I think rent was paid on top. And then creamery, 100 bucks. You could go and get groceries or food.
Grocery. They have like burgers and stuff too.
Yeah. We were broke. Yeah. I mean, my wife and I, we were broke. Broke. And my oldest son had just been born, Ryder, and had undeveloped lungs. And so he's had to stay about a week in the hospital. And so we came out of the hospital about $4,000, $5,000 in debt.
Wow.
And it was not fun time. Money was tight. And so, yeah, to get drafted to Atlanta Hawks and get a $50,000 check was dream come true, right?
Yeah.
And this is how great my wife is. So you get the $50,000 check. You know, I think my contract's like $360 first year, $720 second year. So we know we're going to make good money, and then we find out how much we're paying in taxes, and we're like, cut that in half. Okay. Okay. So
and you have an agent still,
we're still okay. Okay. And she went and helped her family out. You know, she read this quote by Boyke Packer a long time ago. It said, "Give a piece of crust away, get a loaf back."
Mm.
And said, you know, my parents love me and help me, and they're in a house that, you know, they owe more than it's worth. Let's go help them. You know, and so we took most of that and helped her parents. And that was the start of understanding the rewards of giving back yourself. We hope we helped. We hope they're the greatest people. They're the nicest. My mother-in-law's going straight to heaven. She's one of the most loyal BYU fans and greatest humans ever. Greatest grandma. But we've been so rewarded for giving back. And that was my wife initially saying, you know what? Immediately, as soon as we get some money, we're going to go help people.
That's awesome. What do you remember from that rookie season? And how many times did you dunk on somebody that was awesome?
Steven Jackson singing, "Will the Real Slim Shady Please Stand Up," my first practice. The whole song. The whole song. He was so pumped that I was on the team. Treated me like his little brother.
He knew about the Elder 8-mile thing?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody?
I assume they...
Was it a thing in the NBA with you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I went to Detroit. It was like... You know, Eminem's in town. Yeah, yeah. It's a big deal.
You remember this kid from Orem?
Yeah, a Mormon. they treated me really, really well. It was phenomenal. It was fun. The guys were great, very professional. Terry Stotts was an incredible head coach. Ran some nice little alley-oop plays for me. I just loved it. I loved it. The sad thing was, which I think it kind of helped, the same thing happened with Jimmer, is – it just wasn't structurally sound as far as a healthy, empowering organization. Ted Turner owned it. He'd sold it during my rookie year. They fired the GM. They fired Terry Stotts, the head coach. And so the whole kind of internal broke up. Because I had Jason Terry, Steven Jackson, Rasheed Wallace, Theo Ratliff, Bob Sura, me. I mean, Boris Diaw. We had a great team. And they kind of just blew it up in the middle of the season. Similar to what Jimmer happened with Paul Westfall.
Yeah, and that happened weeks in.
Like, yeah.
It was rough.
Yeah, and it's tough because it is relationships and you have each other's back, and these guys are the ones that saw me all summer and wanted me. And
yes. Whose agenda was that I'm here that isn't here now?
Yep.
That's rough.
Yep. And they brought in Mike Woodson, who was still great, but then they drafted quite a few guards. And Spain came. And Spain came and they had Luis Scola, Jose Calderon, Tiago Splitter, Nocioni. Just an unbelievable team.
Bunch of NBA guys in the future.
Yeah. Said, look, you're going to make $720. How about we pay you, you know, 2 years, $4 million, and we won't, you know, your taxes are going to be half of what you would pay, and we'll pay for your rent, we'll pay for this and that. I mean, and I'm looking at my wife and our firstborn child saying, I got to take care of him. You know, like, let's go. Let's go.
And you speak Spanish.
From Chile.
And you've lived in a foreign country.
Yep.
So this is an unfamiliar ground for you, at least.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wife, yes. Wife cried the first night in Atlanta, cried the first night in Spain.
Totally.
Farthest she ever went was Oklahoma on a dad's work trip.
This is quite the trip now.
And now she craves it and misses it and wishes we'd go back to Spain. But it ended up being a great decision. Spain was awesome. Playing with Luis Scola, Pablo Prigioni, two of my most dear friends today, playing 70 games a year and winning 60. I mean, it was phenomenal. Good money, good people, great experiences, incredible culture. 10 times better than it was in Atlanta.
Mm. So, because people look at the NBA and they go, the NBA or nothing. It's like, no. You don't understand the landscape of basketball out there. So there's a guy like Brandon Davies,
yep,
who's having a similar situation. He's been a EuroLeague star, and yes, he played a little bit in the NBA. Kind of similar path to you, making great money, having a great life. Like it feels like he's the second version of this, maybe from BYU basketball.
Yeah, he's crushing it. He's doing a great job. And Barcelona is the best. I mean, incredible budgets, people, architecture, community. And that's what you want. You know, no matter where you work or what you do for a living, you want to work with an incredible group of people. You want to solve interesting problems. You want this community that you feel a part of. You want to feel empowered. And the world's lacking that in organizations. There's so many organizations that just aren't healthy. They don't have healthy leadership. And so to play for a community like Vitoria, Spain, in the Basque community up north, where this team wasn't, you know, supposedly this big team, but they had a big budget. The fans knew basketball. When Atlanta could barely get 10 or 12,000 out to a game, you know, Vitoria, Spain had 25,000 out, whistling the whole time, waiting for you, and trying to find out where you live and what apartments, trying to get your signature, they were all in. And so the vibe of it, which I'm sure Brandon's feeling in Barcelona, is just a 100 times better feeling than it is if playing for some teams in the NBA.
Wow. Okay, so let's walk through sort of that journey there. So you talked about Spain. How do you say it? Tau Ceramica?
Yep.
That's your first team in Spain, 1 year?
Baskonia, yep.
Baskonia.
Two years,
okay. Then you go to Moscow, Dynamo Moscow. This is sort of when I'm like, oh, Travis is playing overseas. Internet, it's hard to know what's going on. I'm like, oh, Travis is in Russia. I don't know what's going on here. Tell me about Russia, because you you become a superstar in Russia, which is something you probably never thought ever when you were little, thinking, oh, I'm going to, one, be a pro basketball player, and two, in Russia.
In Spain, Final Four, you know, win 60 out of 70 games, and we're on the best, if not the second best team in all of Europe. And Moscow has big budgets, and they have hopes and dreams of building a great team too. And so what do? If you want to build a great team, but you don't know how, you go buy the best players and, you know, Brooklyn Nets style. And so they came out and offered us a large sum of money. And this is how Russia negotiates. Spain, my team in Spain says, we want you forever. Please stay here. You've been a phenomenal part of the team. We'll pay you $2 million a year. And Russia says, no, we'll pay you 2.1. And Spain says, we'll pay you 2.2. And Russia says, enough of this. We'll pay you 5. <You know? laughs> That's Russian negotiations. And so we're discussing it, going back and forth. My wife says, Israel and Russia, probably the two places I wouldn't feel safe with our kids and our family. We want to have more kids. And how much are they offering? What do you think? Oh, let's go try it. And so, and it turned out to be awesome. They treated me so well. It was so fun. We ended up starting a foundation, building a orphanage there, and helping support many kids. It's been a blessing in our life. And then also, they gave me Russian citizenship. We played really well. We had great teams. I had great coaches, including David Blatt, who coached the Cavs.
Mm-hmm.
Great choice. We had the feeling it would work out, and thank goodness it did, because we were a little bit nervous about it, and it turned out to be an awesome blessing.
What are some things about Russia that nobody knows about, or that maybe is like a stereotype that's not accurate, that you were like, no, Russia's awesome?
The people are fantastic. They're a little bit quiet and cold at first, and then you get in their home and they're everything but. They've been taught not to draw attention to themselves, you know, through all those
understandably
years, yes. And they love sports. They love people. They love their families. They really just want to be successful and happy within their family. Most of them hate the politics and all the other weird stuff that comes with it. So really, just like us, brothers and sisters, normal people that, that if you treat well, they treat you even better. And they've treated us very, very well. Backed our foundation, backed me, helped my family. Anytime one of my kids had a birthday, they'd come over with Lego sets to Paw Patrol movie, you know, whatever it was at the time. And it just ended up being a phenomenal experience. Cold, a lot of baked potatoes and ice cream on the streets. Food wasn't fantastic. Not like Spain or Italy, right? but the surprising thing about Russia was the U.S. community of expats, they call them. In Madrid, I thought there'd be way more, or in Vitoria, and there was very few members of the church in Spain. In fact, my kids were the only ones in primary. But in Russia, everybody, I mean, our branch was as big and as loyal and as all in as a ward here in Utah. And it was awesome. The relationships and experiences just being a part of members of the church in Russia was worth every year to go over there. And we ended up spending almost 5 years there.
That's amazing. You end up, you mentioned you got Russian citizenship, a red passport, I guess they call it or something. What was that like? Because I know there was this conversation of the 08 Olympics, you're representing Russia. There were some people that are like, hey, what are you doing? You're American. Yet an opportunity to play for Russia in the Olympics. You don't actually end up playing for Russia in the Olympics. Did they qualify or did you not choose to do it?
Yeah, so we didn't go. We chose not to play in it. But what happened is, well, number one, NBA teams are owned by wealthy individuals, right? The professional teams over there are in Russia owned by the KGB and the Army. So the FSB and the Army. So it's equivalent of the U.S. having a professional team and one's backed by the CIA and one's backed by the Army or Navy, right?
That'd be so weird.
Weird, right? So phenomenal budgets.
Who owned Dynamo Moscow?
KGB, FSB. So Viktor Ivanov, he's about third up. Next to Putin. And
so they're like, you're our guy, here's Russian citizenship.
Well,
because we are the government.
Well, number one, you have that. But number two, they protect their players. They protect the Russians and Spain and every country.
What do you mean protect?
As far as players' union. So in Spain, you have to have 2 to 4 players on the team at all times that are Spaniards.
Yeah.
So it'd be like Utah Jazz having to have someone born in Utah on the team at all times. Right. In Russia, you had to have 2 Russians on the court.
Or in this case, United States citizens, I guess.
Could be. Yeah.
It wasn't state driven. It was country driven.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So Russia had 2 Russians on the court at all times. And so
on the court.
On the court. Had to be
That's
on the court
different
playing.
Than on the roster.
Correct.
Interesting. And many leagues still have this, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Absolutely.
In Europe.
Yep. Foreigners, Spaniards. Yeah. And so Russia. The 2 big teams were Dynamo and CSKA, FSB Army.
Dynamo.
Yep, Dynamo. Gotcha. And CSKA had J.R. Holden, African-American kid, could really play, been there a long time, and they had given him Russian citizenship. Mm. So the other part was, we need a guy on the court at all times that can play. And if he wanted to play for Olympics, that'd be great. But we need him. And for some reason, they chose me. And they said, what do you think? And if it helps the team, it helps you, you know, give me some love help in the foundation. Let's go help some kids. And sure.
So you negotiated that way?
Yep.
Nice.
Yep. At some point, I think my second contract there, the GM, Drozdov, called me and said, Travis, we love you, but this is not a grocery store. You can't go down and just pick everything you want, you know, because I'm negotiating like my kids' school cars, you know, airplane tickets. I like 10 first class tickets, please. And, you know, he said, listen, bro, enough's enough. I think I was asking for too much at the time. And it worked out really, really well. We ended up not playing in the Olympics, but ended up being a Russian citizen that they could use on the court at all times. And, you know, I played 40 minutes a game.
So you played for Russia, just not in the Olympics?
Correct.
And you chose not to play in the Olympics.
Yep.
You could have played in the Olympics mm-hmm. for Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you choose not
to? I have to be honest, I just really want to spend time with my family. We were training so much.
This is the off season.
Yeah, I was in Italy at the time.
You're in Italy at the time.
Yeah, well, we went to Italy for training camp for the Olympics. And so many times these teams go to a different country to.
So you're still thinking in training camp you are going to play.
Yeah, we're.
Because you went with them.
Yeah, we're with Karolinko, we're with the whole team, we're training. Yeah. And thinking about doing it. And Dave Blatt was the coach, who is also my club team coach, Dynamo coach. And he said, what do you want to do? And it was going to end up being basically a week off. Because our team was so good, we go to the Euro Championships, take a week off and go to the Olympics. And I wouldn't see my family for 4 months. I said, I'd rather go home. I'd rather be with my family. He's like, do what you got to do. And
were they mad about it?
Because
they had given you citizenship to play, I assume.
Yeah, playing. They went back to J.R. Holden to convince him to play a little bit too.
Was there a certain they could only have X amount of these?
I don't think so.
Or unlimited, if
they wanted. Yeah, they end up being nice about it.
Gotcha.
I mean, in all reality, it was more of a club team thing than an Olympic thing.
Gotcha. That's quite the decision.
Yeah.
Because playing in the Olympics is sort of a pursuit of a lifetime, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I love my wife and I love my kids and I really want to be around them and I'm American and I love America and, you know, playing for Russia, trying to beat America was, you know, definitely not something I dreamed of.
So that was part of it? Like, I'm not sure I want to actually do that?
Yeah.
Flattering that they did it, though?
Absolutely.
They liked you so much they wanted you to compete for their country. Which is interesting. In some sports, this happens. Like rugby, they give... Like, half the team's not United States citizens per se. They're just U.S. eligible.
Sure.
It's interesting. So this happens way more than you think.
Yep. But yeah. They're competitive and they want to win, and so they try to get the best players to help them do so.
Wow. Okay, so then you go to Spain. Your story's not over. You're still going. Real Madrid. This is a place where you were already a star in Russia. But, like, what was playing for Real Madrid? Who's the arch rival, by the way, of, like, FC Barcelona, right?
Yep.
So you know that rivalry. Yep. But they treat you so well there, it sounds like.
Yep.
What was that like? And then are you homies with the soccer team, by the way? Is it like facilities by each other?
Yeah, yeah. Practice together, yep.
So who are some of the soccer players you got to?
My Christmas dinner table was me, Pablo Prigioni, Kaká, Cristiano Ronaldo, and Marcelinho. I think Roberto Carlos was actually
Brazilian.
He had just left, and he actually signed for Dynamo, so I saw him in Russia.
Oh, wow. One time I yelled at him in Portuguese, like, good game.
Yeah.
In Salt Lake.
His calves are like twice as big as Luke Staley's.
He has maybe the greatest goal of all time. It's this left-footed blast that just curves in.
Oh, yeah.
Kick.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
No, he's amazing. I'm in Russia. They call us from Real Madrid. The CSKA coach, army coach in Russia, had left for Real Madrid. And they had signed Pablo Prigioni, who was my all-time greatest friend. And he was in Spain, and they had convinced him to go to Real Madrid. So he calls me, too, with Ettore Messina. And they say, Trav, come on, man. Come to Madrid. And I say, I'm loving Russia. Say, you don't like Russia. Come on, man. You know, come on. Come to Madrid. I say, I really love it here. I love my coaches. I love my teammates. But I love Pablo. And I know Pablo's going to pass me the ball. And he's a dear friend. And in all reality, I went back to play with Pablo. Went back to play with my old teammates, and they signed many of my former teammates. You know, Sergio Vidal and Luka Doncic was one of the juniors on the team, and it was a smart move. It was
how
fun,
old was
fun
he at the
back.
Time?
I think he was like 16.
He was a young guy.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. Man, what was he like when he was young?
Same thing with Marc Gasol, a little chubby, and those guys and the incredible players. You could see the talent, you could see the potential, but had a little bit of Euro whiny in them. You know, Luka would not get the ball or make a bad, you know, pass or turnover, and he'd put his head down, run over the bench, and cry. You know, so it took some maturity, and I don't think anybody knew how good he was going to be.
Oh my gosh,
he's turned out to be
top five in the world right now.
Yeah, he's turned out to be incredible.
Yeah, that's wild.
But so was Marc Gasol. Marc Gasol turned out to be a big-time player as well. And so those they develop their players really, really well in Europe. They do an incredible job of spending time with you and teaching you how to play the game the right way.
Did you learn Russian in Russia?
Yeah, я говорю по-русски не очень хорошо. I speak a little bit.
What did you just say?
I don't speak very good Russian. That's what I said in Russia. That's what I said in Russian.
No, you don't speak very
good. Yeah, я говорю по-русски не очень хорошо. I speak a little bit of Russian, but not very good.
Was it like grocery store Russian?
Yeah.
Like you could ask
I started them. Really, you know, I downloaded Pimsleur app and really started focusing trying to learn Russian.
So you're 2.5
My Spanish lingual. Is way better. Spanish is way better.
I would hope so, yeah. Although you lived there longer, but yeah, you weren't forced to, I guess, interact.
We were almost 5 years. We were 5 years in Spain as well, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, we loved Spain.
5 years in Russia, 5 years in Spain. How has that shaped like your kids and your family dynamic? Having that experience.
Yeah, we loved it. I mean, we loved every part of it. We're hippies. All we want to do is travel, and we want to just keep going around. We just love the people.
Yeah.
We love Europe. We got the opportunity to go back with BYU basketball team and Mark Pope and
to the Italy trip.
Italy and me and Brian Santiago went a week or two early and hit up Spain together.
Oh, nice!
And then we met up with Italy. I don't know. It'd be hard to describe everything. All the blessings that have come from our family for have lived in Europe. Again, the relationships, the experience, the food, the cultures. I hope we're more well-rounded people. I hope we judge less. I hope, you know, we just have an affinity for all those cultures and people. They're just amazing. Everywhere you go, you find, if you really go with an open heart, you find some amazing humans, amazing learnings.
So now what are you up to all these years later? Because I know you're in business and you got your foundation doing some good work, it sounds like.
Trying to, right? I got home and I didn't know what to do with my life.
What year is this?
2011-12.
Nice.
And I think I want to be done, but I keep getting a few contracts. And my wife's like, you promised me, Ryder's nine. Right? He turns nine, he's structure, and he's... It's more about the kids than
your oldest kid.
Yeah. Time to wrap it up. And I meet with Blake Roney. Blake Roney is just one of my favorite people ever. He's the founder and owner of New Skin. He's been successful in business, marriage, life, kids, everything. So someone that in all facets is successful. And I meet with him and he says, what are you gonna do with your life? What do you want to do? I don't know. Well, Do you want to coach? Do you want to scout? Do you want to be away from your family? For 10 years, you were gone from your family every other week. Do you want to keep doing that? Oh, no. Do you want callings? Do you think it's important to progress and become a better person? Will callings help you do that? Yeah. Well, do you want to go to church? Yeah. I mean, okay. So I think building businesses is one of the most charitable things you can do. I said, you sell lotion for a living. Like, how's that charitable? I said, well, I help people. I have resources and people come to me and people, all my kids need skills and confidence and a community to be around. They need a team and they need to feel valued and they need money to be able to live. And we solve interesting problems. And I was
like that process of building a business.
I was completely addicted.
Interesting. And the ability to obviously make money, but then to be helpful with that money.
Yep.
Like you were talking about.
Yeah. And have abundance mentality as far as I'm going to do something really hard. I like to do hard things. You know, I've been trained to, you know, fight over an orange basketball. I like hard stuff. And so I'm going to do something really hard, which building a business is, for all the entrepreneurs out there, is tough mentally. A lot less physically than sports and basketball was, way more mental. And you can build an A-plus team. You can completely change your world and possibly some people's world. And you all benefit from it. And you bless each other with each other's talents. And so I set off on a rampant, you know, adventure to start businesses. And we started our nonprofit, and then we started Tech9, Lyft Credit, and Eddie. And it's been a blast. Eddie's an HR platform that empowers local businesses to have healthy organizations. And it's an HR play, it's payroll, ATS. I work with awesome humans that we're trying to really democratize HR and make the world a better place as far as how people are treated within organizations. The foundation has 10 children's centers around the world. Tech9 has 200 employees in 6 different offices. Lyft has 50 employees and it's in 4 or 5 states. Just got done being a bishop. Then I was and then called into a stake presidency down at Utah Valley University in a YSA. My oldest son's on a mission in Barcelona.
Let's talk about that for a sec.
Yeah.
When he gets that call back to Spain.
Unbelievable. I almost cried. I literally almost cried. I was so in shock. Family was there opening the call. We're so nervous. My wife thinks it's Russia. And we love Russia, but it's scary. It's you know, there's a little part of that. It was a little
they've made movies about missionary in Russia.
Yeah, it's a little some uncertainty. And he gets Barcelona, Spain. If there was an assignment, we would choose for him. And thank goodness for revelation and believing and probably mom's prayers helped too. And he was so pumped. He
just got there.
I mean, yeah, he wanted to go to Hawaii or Spain. You know, it's like, that's how much we love Spain.
I have a cousin
Spain.
In Cancun. I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And the greatest thing about being home too was I got to coach. You know, I got to coach at Springville High. I coach at Springville High right now and part of the varsity staff. And I got to coach him this last year. And I would get to coach my next one coming up, who's an eighth grader, who's a phenomenal player. And I need the kids in my life. I need them. I love being around them. I love giving them advice. Coaches still have a voice in the world. And they've blessed my life.
That's awesome, man. I remember at some point I asked you, I don't remember if I just asked you if I could add a jersey or if you just sent it, but you sent me one from your Russian team.
Oh, really? From Dynamo?
Dynamo, yeah. So I've got one, and you signed it, which is super cool. So I really appreciate that, man. You end up getting do you get a nonprofit management certificate from Duke?
We started a foundation. We're building children's centers, you know, raising money, and I figured I should learn how to run a foundation. So went back to Duke University. I almost got my MBA from there, and but decided to start a business instead. And
did they teach you how to draw charges? Is that a thing? They're like, here's how you draw a charge. Coach can't walk right. You through it.
No, they did, not me. They taught us such good stuff. I mean, nonprofit world. The people, the processes, yeah, it was a great experience. Went back to Duke, got a nonprofit management certificate, and we've been building businesses ever since.
And then your house build is featured on a TV show. What was that like?
Oh my gosh, yeah, we're building.
That was
this,
cool.
It's funny. It's like we bought some land down in Mapleton. We felt really good about.
Shout out to Mapleton. I just moved down there.
We love it.
So good.
And All our neighbors keep saying, don't tell people you love Mapleton. Leave them. Let them go to Alpine.
I mean, it sucks.
Yeah, it stinks. So went down there and we're building a home, and Studio McGee is helping design it. And apparently they signed a deal with Netflix. So they approach us and say, is there any way we put your house on Netflix? I said, man, I don't want to be on TV. You know, we don't want our kids' rooms on TV.
You're
we don't
really
want...
letting people in.
Yeah, yeah. And you have to be, you know, a little bit sensitive to – and. You know, they made it worthwhile, and then they also are just great people, Shay and Sid.
Yeah, they were awesome.
They're great humans, yeah. And so we said sure. So, put us on the Netflix episode, and wow, my gosh! I mean, I got people that I baptized in Chile hit me up like, oh, nice house, you know, I'm gonna see a nice court. So the reach was
cool.
It was way bigger than I thought it'd be.
Worth it in that regard to just like connect with people again.
Yeah. Yeah, and we've been able to help people. They're building their dream homes. They're asking us for plans or what we would do differently or, you know, what type of light do we have. And it's fun just to help people. There's so much abundance if you just don't be the, you know. I swear rich people can get really weird. And so just have that abundance mentality where you help everybody. It's great for everyone to be successful. You want everyone to be happy and be productive. And we can all have the same chandelier. That's okay. It's sweet.
Yeah. Yes, we can.
Yeah, it's exactly. Awesome.
What's a chandelier, Travis?
I don't know, some light.
Let's talk about your you have a basketball court connected to your house. It's in this barn.
Mm-hmm.
Walk me through the design choice there. That's awesome. I can see it from Highway 89.
Well, it stemmed from a frustration that I love my kids and I love spending time with them. And we don't have an alfalfa farm or – oh, I guess you do now. But we don't have like cows and
yeah.
And so
wait, you have an alfalfa farm at your place?
Yeah, we have 15 acres of alfalfa. We cut 3 cuts a year. It's
is
awesome.
That to sort of honor your dad?
It just happened by accident.
It just happened.
Yeah, just like,
okay. But your dad did that growing up.
Yeah,
that's cool.
All comes back around. How are you going to train your kids? Like, how are you going to spend time with them? How are you going to teach them life lessons, but at the same time milk a cow and work. Like, kids need to work, man. They need jobs. They need to stay busy. They get off their devices and get away from their friends and be around family, like real. And so I wake up at 5 a.m. and I train my kids. Been doing it with Ryder since he was in fifth grade. And it's quiet. It's special, sacred time where I can tell him, you know, oh, man, I really love the gospel. Like, I really do. It's made my life better. The relationships from the gospel while we're shooting free throws. You know, I really love your mom. You know what I like about your mom? You should marry someone like your mom, because your mom's special. And little by little, especially when COVID hit, churches weren't open and stake presents were taking rims off, you know.
That happened.
Chaos.
So the people wouldn't go in.
Chaos. Were yeah.
I'm like, I hadn't heard that. That's wild.
And I'd call one state president and say, "Hey, can I get keys to the church?" And he'd say, "Oh, I can think of nothing better than a dad and a son playing." And then I call another one, because sometimes the 6 a.m. ball hits, I need another plan B. And he'd say, "No, absolutely not." And the Marriott Center, you know, had the events. I have, you know, trying to get access there. I got the annex, and, you know, Coach Pope's like, "Man, everyone's coming in here and we're practicing more." And, you know, it was stemmed from a frustration of, I want a place where I can spend time with my kid, and I want to work out, and I want to play, and I want teams, and I want everyone to be able to use it. So we went down to Mapleton, and now everyone uses it. My sister will be there tonight with her son and their team playing. Many people have come and used it, hopefully it's been a blessing, because it's been a blessing in my life. And so, yeah, it's ginormous. It was only going to be half court, and then it went to full court.
You got to go full if you're going to build it, right?
Everyone calls me, "Dude, do full. Don't do half," you know. But yeah. I just wanted a place where I could spend time with my kid and teach him lessons while rebounding for him.
That's awesome. What's the most random group that's used it?
Oh my gosh. You know, Clay Thompson.
Clay Thompson used it?
Yeah.
Your homies with Clay?
Yeah. We got the same agent.
He came and just shot?
Yeah. Jake Toulson worked out with Skyler Halford while he was trying to get drafted, yeah, and playing for the Jazz there quite a bit.
Hold on. I want more about Clay.
Yeah.
He just came over and just, "Hey, can I use your barn court?"
Well, I've been working, trying to get him to come speak to my company and my employees, because, yeah, we're big Golden State fans. And he was in town. And, yeah, that dude doesn't take a day off. If he's in an area, he finds a gym and he gets his shots up.
That's cool.
100 twos, 100 threes, 100 free throws, and 100 deep threes.
Makes?
And he's out. Makes. 400. Every day.
Every day?
Every day. Yep.
Wow.
Whole different level.
Yep.
And, it's been awesome. I love it. Love coaching at Springville High. Love being around kids. The game of basketball has completely blessed my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes back to my mom. My mom pushed me. You know, we read this book called Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother. It's about a book about a lady from China who marries a guy from America. I think she's Harvard, he's Yale. They meet up and they have two parenting different styles completely. She's tough. And he's, you know, pick up a stick and cheer for him. And she says no. And they end up having two different kids, two girls that are different personalities. And they both end up at Juilliard because she pushed them. And my wife read that book, and we have pushed our kids. I think today kids are so much more capable. Kobe Bryant said it in a documentary, throw the kitchen sink at them. Teach them everything. Teach them pick and roll. Teach them one-on-one. Teach them everything that you've ever learned. Don't start with the basics. They can absorb it. And we've tried to do the same thing, as we just push our kids to reach their potential. You have to do it in a classy way. You got to present it in a fun way. It has to be fun instead of rigorous. But, man, they've done really well. And I got this group of eighth graders. We're sponsored by Stance Socks. They're called Stance Elite for anybody on Instagram that won't follow us. And they are the real deal. I got some kids that can play that hopefully will be playing at BYU one day.
Mm. I went to the Stance Warehouse sale, yeah, so they are legit as well.
Yep.
I have more socks than I could ever wear, which is beautiful for cheap. Yeah, they're great. They're great. Well, sweet. Everyone needs to find that vehicle, don't they, that will change your life? Like, what's the thing that is bigger than you that you can latch onto and that will push you and challenge you and disappoint you and make you successful? You got to find that. For you, if it started with basketball and it's gone beyond that, right? Everyone's got to find whatever that is, it feels like.
Yep. You need to, each one of us needs help progressing as individuals. And sometimes it happens through meaningful relationships. Sometimes it happens through sports. Sometimes it happens through our work or our jobs, missions. But I think absolutely we have to never stop learning, never quit, keep working hard, keep progressing as individuals. And I think that's the main reason we're down here. And then we got to help each other. It's amazing how we're all just so different. I mean, I got 5 kids and they are different. They are so different, different personalities, different ways to handle things. And then we all bless each other. And so one of the greatest things about life is being on a team. You know, I'm on a team in the gospel. I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I get to serve in a state presidency. We dream, just like my wife and I go on long car rides and say, man, look at that big house. What if we lived there one day? Or what if we lived in this community? What if we did have a ton of money? What kind of house would we build? Would you have a basketball court in it? Oh, nah. You know, I'd have a hair studio. You know, that's our early conversation. And our state presidency, we dream. What could the steak be like? You know, the kids love coming. What's the experience like? At work, we dream. You know, what's our office building going to be like? Are we going to have a gym? Are we going to have a huge cafe? What's life going to be like in heaven with our kids? You know, are we going to be able to like just close your eyes and go to Laguna Beach anytime we want, even though we want to live in Utah? You know, it's just fun to have hope and to dream and to help others do the same.
That's beautiful. I love that. Well, thanks for taking a few minutes and sharing your life story here. It's been fun.
You're the man. We love you. We love Spencer. Thanks for having us on.
Absolutely. Okay, that'll do it for us. Listen to previous episodes on the BYU Radio app or where podcasts are found. For Travis Hansen, Elder 8 Mile, and producer Trent Reimschussel, I'm Jerem Jordan. You've just listened to Deep Blue on BYU Radio.